Good evening, James McGanney here with my Science Hour for July 28th, 2022, and a big show tonight. Now we're heading, this is by the way, in the year-long series of lectures on the history of my discoveries. This time period, where we're getting into the late 1990s, early 2000s, is just absolutely insane with disinformation, trolls on the internet, NASA helping crazy people get, let's say, photos of the sky, trying to say that that's where Planet X is. The CIA is going bonkers. And also, you have to understand, the CIA is one of the most corrupt agencies that's ever crawled out from under a rock. They're not, they have nothing to do with the United States. They're the bankers' police force, and they basically run the world with nefarious operations to fix elections, run drugs, human trafficking, and protect the bankers' interests, including in the United States. So you're possibly wondering, when I'm talking about the history of my discoveries, what this has to do with me or my discoveries or anything else. And actually, it has a lot to do with the, for example, the CIA owns all of the press release agencies in the country. They own the social media. As soon as any of these things become successful, they come in, infiltrate, and take it over. And that includes things like MUFON or Skywatch. And so at any rate, these are going on during all of this time, basically controlling the information that goes to the public about science, about UFOs, about literally any topic that comes out. And of course, now we're in the time in the late 1990s, early 2000s. It's really gearing up because the prediction of Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens that on May 15th, 2003, we're all going to die. And it turns out that that was a full moon, a red moon, a very unusual, called a wolf moon. There's other names for it, a blood moon. And these are very rare events because the moon is directly in the penumbra. It's the partial shadow of the Earth, and it turns red. It's a reddish effect. It's a atmospheric effect where the sunlight comes through Earth's atmosphere, bends, and casts just the red part of the spectrum onto the moon. And so this was an event that would happen, and very typically, the blood moons are up in the sky or when this is happening, but on this particular event, the blood red moon would have risen up over the horizon. And that's why you saw on the books, the many books that were printed and millions of them distributed and sold about Planet X, that showed a big red ball on the cover. And that's what you were supposed to be. I mean, this visual was visual, very heavy with the visuals, that's what Planet X would look like. And then it was set up that there would be mass suicides. And, of course, I had my radio show. I was on a lot of radio shows with Alex Merklinger, with Clay Douglas was a big radio show at the time. Rents, I believe I was on his show, and of course Coast to Coast, talking about the fact that all of this disinformation was going on and that NASA was supporting it by providing photos of deep sky that your average amateur would not have been able to get with even a good backyard telescope or good amateur telescope. And so the point is that since 1995, when Hale-Bopp actually became a comet, and of course that was, I've talked about that, that was the Planet X object that Harrington discovered in 1991, and they were very, very paranoid about this. But they had their own disinformation campaign set up, and it came out of Los Angeles. And so eventually when I get to talk about my travels of, say, 2002, 2003, 2004, I'm the lead speaker at some of these big conferences. And so one of the big topics, of course, is Planet X. My book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, comes out in probably around 2000, is selling just like crazy. And, of course, then there's a video that comes out that hits the street nationally. And I've already talked about that with Tony Scarpelli, who was the producer on that for a local cable television channel. And that was also in the early 2000s. And the whole idea was that this Planet X topic was huge. But, of course, my work went back decades, long before anybody was talking about Planet X. I was talking about how comets can become planets. And the reality was that when you see a Planet X object, it's not going to be a big red ball in the sky. It's going to be a comet, a big comet. And here we have Hale-Bopp up in the sky for 6 years, from 1995, July 15th, 1995, the day it was discovered as a big comet, to into the early 2000s, visible in the night, in the sometimes even in the daytime sky. So all of this is going on. I'm on the Coast to Coast show. Art Bell has been blamed for the death of 37 people in Los Angeles, a so-called cult, which was not really a cult, but interestingly enough, they were also developing software, high-level encryption software, and the CIA could not break into it. And this group was selling, it was called Heaven's Gate. That was the name of their company. They were software programmers. And so they were already in trouble with the CIA, but they also had this situation where they were waiting for a sign, and Hale-Bopp was the sign. And of course, this goes back to 1995. So the CIA comes in and starts manipulating Art Bell. They have an accusation about his son. That didn't wash. That finally got overturned. And everything they could do to destroy that man. And then finally, it got so convoluted, but Art finally lost his radio show. Now understand that Art Bell had basically come out of nowhere. He was a hometown guy, lived in where? Down in the Nevada, out in the desert in a little trailer house. He runs this radio show and he has 650 affiliate stations. It's the biggest radio show in the world. And Art is running this, and he built this up over decades of having, I don't know if it was decades, but a long period of time. And he would have guests on, and a lot of it he would do just himself, talking about paranormal phenomena. And, of course, in the middle of the night, people are up, they can't sleep, they turn into Art Bell, because he was really one of the only shows on, other than, say, Nashville, Tennessee Music, where the AM stations, after a certain, I think, 11 o'clock at night, the big AM stations of Nashville, Tennessee, would turn way up and they would cover the whole country with the AM signal, and which is similar to shortwave in a sense, but they cranked the power way up. And then, in fact, when I was a little kid, I would stay out at my friend's farm. And late at night, we could turn on the Nashville stations with just an AM radio and listen to Johnny Cash and Nashville Music, and because we were kind of music, we had a lot of interest in music. And so, but other than that, Art Bell was the, if you wanted to listen to something of a more serious tone, not Nashville Music, those were the only two options. So Art built this really interesting audience, millions and millions of people, 650 affiliate radio stations around the world, literally, put on the cover of magazines as being the top talk show host on the planet. And here he's talking about Planet X. And he has guests on that they don't want you to hear, including me. So anyway, they go after Art Bell and they destroy him. And then they have their company, Clear Channel, come in and buy out the radio show. Or take it over, I don't really know. And then eventually there was a different mixture of hosts that they had on there for a while. And then they finally got George Norrie to come in, and now he's been the main host there. And, of course, I've been on the Coast to Coast AM radio show many times, with George Norrie. In fact, I've been in the studio with him and Tom, the producer, in Los Angeles. There are pictures of me in the studio there, and doing the show. And that was a night when, by the way, that particular night, George was releasing his book, Talking to the Dead. And there's a picture of George and me standing there with George holding his book up. And I think that appeared in the LA Times the next day, because they wanted to have high-level guests come into the studio to do the show instead of just being on, like a phone call type of guest. They wanted people in the studio. So I was their first person to do that. And I can't remember what year that was. I happened to be on a trip at that time. And I was in Los Angeles. I was at the Universal Studios doing a History Channel special, which later came out. It was a six-part series, and I was the main guest on that History Channel special. It was called Apocalypse. I think Apocalypse Now or something like that. But it talked about my main specialty on there was the Hopi predictions regarding Planet X. And so anyway, but this is a time that was just absolutely exploding with activity. And of course, my work is central to it all. And of course, this time also is the time period I'm transitioning out of the Millennium Group webpage, which was getting millions of hits per week. And as with many things, or like musical groups or anything like that, it broke apart. And I formed my own web page, which was jmcanniescience.com, which is the same page I have right now, and selling my books, etc. And then the book Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, came out in the early 2000s. And then I was a guest speaker at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, 2 years in a row, 2003 and 2004. And very interestingly enough, when I was on my way to the UFO Congress in the 2003 event, these are held in February in Laughlin, Nevada, at the, I forget the hotel there, big hotel, with, thousands of people attending. They had an audience probably of 1,500 people, big event. And all the people stay at the hotel, because unless they happen to be from Vegas or Laughlin, but a lot of people from Los Angeles, and the CIA had a very heavy presence there. I'll be talking about that. And in fact, they sent out an agent to compromise me. And anyway, I'll talk about that also, but and how that all came down. But the point I was making was that on my way to the 2003 event, by the way, which I was, my main topic was Planet X, but also to talk about the electromagnetic propulsion systems, which was in the 2004 talk that I gave. That's where the term electric highways to the stars was popularized. And that's where I talked about the Atlantis to Tesla book and the fact that you should not be using rockets to go into outer space. But interestingly enough, on my way to the 2003 event, I'm going through Texas. I go down I-35W from where I'm at, take the turn, go west on the freeway. I can't remember the number down there, but main freeway going west across the United States. And I go into a gas station, I look up on the TV monitor, and the Columbia space shuttle accident is occurring as I'm in this gas station. And it's raining pieces down all around the countryside around me. As I'm right in the middle of the debris path. And so anyway, this is crazy. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm on the way to Laughlin, Nevada to talk to this entire group of people about not using rockets to go into space, and here's the space shuttle Columbia breaking up above my head that particular day. It was February 1st, 2003. I remember that in the gas station paying for my gas and buying some stuff to eat in the car on the route. And they're on the TV monitor, Space Shuttle Columbia breaking up. And I walk outside, and I'm not really able to see anything, but I'm right in the debris path of this colossal accident. But anyway, I'll be talking about the UFO congresses. In 2002, an interesting event happened. I was invited to be a guest at something called Global Wings Conference. And it was a conference that was held a number of years in a row. I don't know how many years, but in this particular event, it was in Denver, Colorado. And I said, no, I'm not going to travel to Denver to do this like couple-hour talk. And so I said, I turned it down. But a friend of mine, who I will talk more about here, Mark Hazelwood, had a 2-hour slot there. And Mark and I were friends. In fact, we had never really met personally before. But Mark wrote a book. And the name of that book was Blindsided: Planet X Passes in 2003, Earth Changes. He eventually wrote a second book called Delicate Earth History, Science, Planet X. And Mark turned out to be the son of Lee Hazelwood. Lee Hazelwood was a songwriter, lived in Hollywood. From what Mark told me, they lived next to Bob Hope up in the Hollywood Hills. And Mark grew up in Hollywood, so he was, had the movie stars in his house. And Lee Hazelwood was a popular guy, happened to be Art Bell's favorite songwriter. And so anyway, there was that connection between Lee Hazelwood and Art Bell's favorite singer was Nancy Sinatra. So Lee Hazelwood wrote most of Nancy Sinatra's music, like These Boots Were Made for Stomping, etc. So anyway, Mark is the son of Lee Hazelwood. Writes this book, and talking to Mark, I'm not really sure what drove him to do this, but it was like one of those things that just happened along. So Mark was on with Art Bell talking about this topic. And at that time, it was the late 1990s, etc., early 2000s, and my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, just came out, which provided the science regarding the whole issue of Planet X. And by the way, I spent most of my time on radio shows deflecting the baloney that somehow May 15, 2003, there would be a Planet X object crashing into Earth. I said, this is not true. This is fictitious. And so then I was drawn into this as some kind of Planet X nutcase. And of course, I had, I spent most of my time talking about the fact that this was baloney. And I discovered also that NASA had been providing photographs for the crazy lady talks to aliens, we're all going to die May 15, 2003. And, of course, that never happened. But anyway, going back to the Mark Hazelwood, Mark, at the 2002 Global Wings Conference, had a talking spot. And it turned out, it was the middle of the summer, and I was with some friends. And we said, let's go on a road trip. And so we go out and we start just driving out west. And I'm about 400 miles east of Denver. And I'm going, this global conference is going on. And I never thought I would even be here or want to go there. But here I am 400 miles east of Denver. So I called up Mark and I said, Mark, I don't have a spot there. He says, I'll give you an hour of my 2-hour slot. I'm like, okay, you're on. So I go there, I go to the hotel, check in, and Mark gets up and he starts giving his talk. And there's probably, between 600 and 1,000 people at this conference. And it's all about, all kinds of esoteric topics. But of course, Planet X is big on everybody's mind, because it's been blown totally out of proportion by the CIA in this total disinformation campaign. Of course, taking attention away from Hale-Bopp, which is the real Planet X object, and turning it over to this big red moon that's going to dawn on come up over the horizon on May 15, 2003. So anyway, Mark is giving his talk, And then he says, okay, by the way, I'm going to give the other hour of my talk here to James McCanney. And so I get up there and I get a big round of applause, and nobody knew I was going to be there. And so I get up and I talk about the book, etc., and the Planet X topic in general. And you can see that video, by the way, on my two DVD set of historically important videos. That's captured and remastered into DVD from the original. At that time, of course, they were shooting not digital, but it would have been shot in like VHS tape. The same with the UFO Congresses, which were then remastered. Okay, so anyway, I get up and I give my talk, and question and answer period. And then there was another session, which was a purely closed room question and answer period. So Mark and I were there, and we were discussing the whole issue of Planet X, etc. And that is available also on that DVD set. It's the two DVD sets available on my webpage. And so at any rate, after my talk and after the afternoon discussion, the hotel has a pool. I go, oh, great, I'm going to go down to the pool. And so I go down to the pool, and here's a guy dressed very nicely in a suit, and he's got a briefcase. And when I walk in the door, the briefcase is filled with electronics, recording electronics, cameras, the whole thing. And I look at it, and I go, hi, how are you doing? And this guy looks at me, and he closes his briefcase. This guy was there to record and the whole thing, and to record people and get photos of everybody, etc. And so anyway, how are you doing? He goes, yeah, good. He goes, you're that Mr. McCanney, aren't you? I said, yeah, yeah. And he goes, how is it that you come in here, you're not even on the docket, they give you an hour to speak, and you're the most popular person here? How does this work? And everybody knows you. You know, you're not even listed on the schedule. And so that was his question to me. And of course, if you were in the world of Planet X, you would have known about me, because it's just the way it was. I mean, my work was central to this from the time Hale-Bopp became a comet July 15th, 1995. My work was at the center of all of this, because it explained how planets become planets from comets, you know, and my work goes back decades. And of course, that's the last thing the CIA wanted, because in their little world of disinformation, they wanted everybody to think that Planet X was this big orange-red ball. Okay, and by the way, I mentioned the video with Tony Scarpelli. You can see that video too on my two DVD set. You can see that video. It's on the DVD number two. And so I encourage everybody to get those videos, because it's very important that just to see what's going on at the time, and also just my paper trail of where I've been, etc. Because later, in around 2004, the CIA actually comes in and creates disinformation groups to try and steal my material. And like I said before, I had Tom Van Flandert, none other than Robert Harrington's main assistant, who encouraged this whole Planet X search of the Naval Observatory with a contract with NASA. Tom Van Flandert becomes the handler of this group to make sure that they try and steal my information, steal the terminology that I used, and make it into craziness. And Van Flandert was in charge of making sure that happened. And, of course, he was clearly afraid. I don't know, maybe he was became part of the CIA baloney, but clearly he changed his story, being a advocate, 100% advocate of Planet X, this other planet in the solar system, for purely astronomical reasons, to somebody that denied that anything relative to Planet X could ever happen in the astronomical community. And of course, you had the story too that if there was a Planet X object in imminent danger to Earth, the astronomers, the honest, God-fearing astronomers would tell you about it. Pure garbage. They're all controlled. They've all signed non-disclosure agreements. They're all under gag orders. They're a bunch of slimy people who work for a paycheck, and their little paycheck and retirement check are more important to them than truth and honesty. So anyway, that's the state of the world, and it's raging. Remember that in 1991, the CIA took over NASA. So NASA is fully operated and controlled by the CIA, and everything that comes out of NASA is controlled by the CIA mouthpiece. And it is today. It still is today. All of the garbage, and I just talked about I think it was last week I talked about the European Space Agency, and of course they get a lot of contribution, let's say, from NASA. So they don't want to go against, they don't want to upset the apple cart, the dirty snowball apple cart, with full of sugar and cinnamon, the dirty snowball apple cart. Nobody wants to upset that. Nobody can talk any against it in the astronomical world because they'd all be out of business. And they would be out of a job. They would actually probably put themselves in a severe amount of danger. At least they would be out of a job. And that's the question. What's a PhD in astronomy going to do for a job? They're, you know, run a McDonald's hamburger stand? They're not going to get a job. They're going to go into some place and they're going to go, well, I'm sorry, but you're overqualified for this position. And or you're not, you know, you're a specialty. As soon as you get an astronomy job again, you're going to be out the door and leave for that. So nobody's going to hire this guy. So they're going to be pounding the pavement looking for any kind of a job at all. They got their family. They got the wife. They got the kids in school. They got the college to pay for. They're looking at their retirement. Are they going to say anything? No. A big N-O, no. They're totally bought and paid for, period. And so this time period of the late 1990s into the early 2000s is raging with disinformation, trolls on the internet, web pages. Every Looney Tune guy on the planet comes out and is getting on radio shows. Oh, Planet X, I saw it last night. It came around behind the sun. I had a dream about it. I mean, oh my God. Goodness, and people would come up to me. They wanted me to debate these crazy people on the air. I said no. I said no. In fact, I'll just mention this also, that George Norrie called me up. He said, Jim, we want to do a debate. And he had called me up a number of times for various people. But he said he wanted a debate between me and a top NASA official. And I said, okay, that'll go for. I'm not going to debate some guy who's in grandma's basement with his baseball cap on backwards, or some lady that's got a bowl haircut and thinks she talks to aliens. You know, that I'm not going to do. But anyway, sure. And so they had Dr. David Morrison, literally top NASA scientist, favorite student of Carl Sagan, and head of the Near-Earth Asteroid Program at NASA, which was dealing with comets and asteroids, things that could damage Earth. And so we had a debate set up. And prior to the debate, David Morrison required that I talk to him on the phone and set up the ground rules. I said, okay, fine. So we called up and we talked on the phone and said, okay, this is not going to be, there's not going to be any backbiting or name calling, or this is going to be strictly based on scientific arguments. This is going to be a debate based on science of the Planet X, the electrical nature of the solar system, and including Velikovsky. So this was a debate and was widely publicized, and it brought in a massive international audience, not the least of which were scientists. So scientists were listening to this on a grand scale. And there was, and I did not know this, that they were going to have a call-in vote. They didn't tell me that before, which is fine, but I figured I was going to lose the debate 100-0, and me being zero, because of the absolute massive amount of publicity that NASA had given to the anti-Planet X propaganda, you know, anti-Velikovsky, anti-electrical nature of the solar system, etc., on and on and on. And so I thought, there's no way I'm going to even come close to winning this debate, but I'll do it because I wanted to step into the ballpark with a top NASA official, because they're in hiding. Remember, when you see people defending NASA, etc., they're outreach agents. They're people that paid under the table, and I won't mention any names, but there's some that are more famous than others. But basically, they're people who are paid under the table to go out there and pound the pavement on the internet, and everything NASA is good. So anyway, the debate date comes, we get on the air, we start out, and I started out first. I don't know why, maybe they flipped a coin, but I started out first, and basically what I said was that Velikovsky made some mistakes, and I listed them off, like the idea that Venus popped out of Jupiter. I said he didn't understand the science. Venus was captured by Jupiter. And so I went through kind of a laundry list of mistakes that Velikovsky made. And then I said, you got to understand, he was studying calendars. He's not an astronomer, and he was not trying to create astronomical theory. And then he was just showing historical events, all which corroborated this story of Venus being a comet. And I said, what I've done is I've provided the science to this. And then David Morrison came in, and this went on. It was a full show. This is the full Coast to Coast AM show, which is like 3 hours. It's exhausting. When you get done with one of those shows for 3 hours in the middle of the night, you know, I can't sleep afterwards. I get up and walk around. It's like a horse getting done running a derby race. You can't just sit down. You know, you're on your toes mentally for 3 hours. And which is, by the way, I do my own radio shows. I do a lot of interviews with other people. But I don't know how people like Nori does this every night for 3 hours or 4 hours, you know, when he does that whole show. It's amazing to me. And then have all of the different subject areas and guests that he has and has to know about them and their subjects and read their books. It's a massive, my hat's off to anybody that does that. So at any rate, back to the debate. At the end of the debate, there's the call-in vote, and I win the debate by a percentage or two. It's like 52 to 48 and something like that. And, you know, this was shocking to me. This absolutely shocked me. But I won the debate. And I think that tells you also the level of distrust that the public has in NASA. And when I started out criticizing NASA back in the Cornell days, I was on campus criticizing NASA, and everybody's like, oh, NASA, everything they do is perfect. You know, you cannot criticize NASA. And lo and behold, here I am criticizing NASA. So I just kept pounding on the wall. And eventually, piece by piece, it started breaking down. And eventually, the public got the idea, hey, wait, this NASA outfit isn't this rosy, golden, you know, rosy sunglasses outfit. Everything they do is not perfect. And then once you start peeling away the onion layers and looking deeper into NASA and understanding that it's what you see, the visible part is tier two science, wow, you know, now people start to understand that they've been had. And this space program was never meant to go anyplace. It's all of this, oh, we're going to send up 7 people and it's so dangerous that nobody else can go. Takes billions and billions of dollars. And then Bert Rutan comes along with the original XPRIZE and Ansari XPRIZE to go into space 2 times in a row with 3 people within a period of 1 week with the same spacecraft, and he wins it. And nobody ever, ever thought that he would do that. When he did that, there were military, there were the brass out there on the field in the Mojave Desert watching it with their mouth hanging open that this guy could build this, you know, this spacecraft in his, you know, his little facility out there where they used to build airplanes, composite airplanes, and the Long Easy and the other aircraft that were designed by Rutan, and build this thing, and it goes up into space and wins $10 million. And in the middle of that, in the middle of the they tried everything to they had on-site accidents where a guy was killed, where an engine motor blew up, and they had other in-the-air accidents. I think one guy was killed, and one guy was badly injured. And then the FAA came in and said, well, we can't allow you to do this, and then put all kinds of red tape. And when Richard Branson came in to fund it, to provide the money for them to keep going, Burt Rutan, etc., most of the money was spent, and they spent way over $10 million, most of the money was spent on getting through the red tape of the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, red tape that they put in front of them. So, you know, this there is corruption at all levels of this, and unfortunately, I've seen this firsthand. And but like I say, when I first started rapping or rapping on the wall of NASA, everybody said, "Oh, NASA, they're golden. Everything they do is perfect. You know, the right stuff." And I said, no, you don't. The real story about NASA is they're a piece of dog crap, and that's the best thing I could say about them. Not the least of which were the scientists. The good thing about NASA, which is really not NASA, are the engineering companies that built the amazing spacecraft. Those are the unsung heroes of the space program. The people that built the hardware, etc. But the NASA scientists, the interpretation of data and the harboring of this data to support their pet theories was pure corruption. Pure corruption. That's the best thing you can say about them. Of course, this is all supported because they keep getting their paycheck. For example, when you go to an American Geophysical Union meeting, there's 20,000 scientists there that are all Tier 2. They spend a lot of money on Tier 2 science. Why? The peer-reviewed journals, the respectable peer-reviewed journals, and oh my goodness, it just reeks of rotten fish when you really know what's going on, because the Tier 1 science has nothing to do with what's going on in Tier 2 science that you see. Okay, now I want to recount an event here. And remember that this fever pitch of crazy lady talks to aliens, we're all going to die, May 15, 2003, Planet X, big red ball. And it turns out that it's going to be a full red, full moon, blood moon, this red effect that I talked about, where the light from the sun comes through the Earth's atmosphere and bends, and the only part of the breakdown of the visible spectrum is the red part that hits the moon, and so it looks blood red, a very unusual event. And so anyway, I'm on radio shows and I'm listening, and about 2 weeks before May 15th, so this is about the 1st of May, 2003, and there's fever pitch, and there's people calling into radio shows that are saying, we're going to have a mass suicide, and this is from France, it's from Japan, it's from the United States, it's like all around the world, all of these mass suicides are planned, and we're just going to kill ourselves, and you know, these messages are coming in on the radio stations. And I'm going, man, this is getting intense. They really want to dump this Planet X concept. And that's what the idea was, to bring it up, to have mass suicides, and then say, oh, it was not really a Planet X after all. This crazy lady, you know, caused all this. So Planet X is not going to happen. There is no such thing, and it's all craziness. And this was what the plan was. And I'm starting to realize this. So anyway, 2 weeks before that, one of the trolls, one of the top trolls on the internet, gets on a radio program and spills the beans. He goes, well, that's not going to be anything. It's just this blood red full moon. And I go, oh my goodness. That's the first time I would have not, you know, this is something that only astronomers would know about. And it was started in 1995. So the only people that could have really provided the impetus for this were the astronomers that worked within the CIA, the Tier 1 science. And these were the astronomers, turns out, at the University of Hawaii, Ali Haino and Hal Weaver and those people were instrumental in starting this Planet X nutcase stuff. Also were instrumental in driving Art Bell out of business because he had posted the photos with the companion of Courtney Brown and Chuck Schrammick on his webpage, which were the real photos, as it turned out. And as I said, at the Canary Island Conference on Hale Bopp, the very first topic was about the companion. So they all knew it. They all knew it, but to the popular press, you will still see that these people thought there was a companion and there wasn't. Well, the truth was that there was a companion. And anyway, that's the whole craziness time of this. But anyway, 2 weeks before the May 15, 2003 date, it turns out that this guy spills the beans on a radio show, and I'm listening to it, and I think it was a Coast to Coast show. So anyway, next day I get on the phone to NASA and I say, hey, this May 15th date, you guys have power of the press and it's going to be a big full moon and you know it. If you don't put the brakes on this and put out the word on vast public scale, then you're going to be responsible for all these mass suicides. And they knew I was right. They knew I was right because it would be publicized. Well, why didn't NASA come in and prevent this? And so anyway, the end result was that it never happened. There were never mass suicides. The day came and went. There was a big red moon. There were no mass suicides. And that was the end of it. I'm going to just quickly talk about how I discovered that NASA was providing photos to the crazy lady talks to aliens, because every day on the internet, they would post photos on this website. And it was all related to the prediction of Planet X in May 15, 2003, etc. And I would look at these photos, and they were clearly not photos of any star patterns that we see on Earth, from, say, even up to average amateur telescopes. And then here is the so-called Planet X, the orange ball in there in the middle of the photo, clearly photoshopped. So I'm going like, where are they getting these photos? And supposedly there was a mystery supporter that was providing these photos on a daily basis of Planet X coming towards Earth. And I'm going like this. And so one day I was going through these photos and they're on the internet and I clicked on them and I went back and I said, I want to see this other one again. And so I clicked on it. One I had already clicked on, and at the time, this was a thing that would happen with operating systems, that if you pulled up a photo and then changed the name of that photo, the original name would still be there. And it would be, and at the second time you pulled it up, the original name would actually come up with the photo. And so I did this. So I clicked on this photo a second time, and up comes the original name, and I recognized it immediately as a NASA format. NASA has a very specific format that they format their photos in at that time. I said, this is a NASA photo. This is a photo from the Hubble Space Telescope. So what they were doing is they would take a star field from the Hubble Space Telescope, take a picture of it, and then doctor it so it looked like there was Planet X, but it wouldn't be, and of course they never said where this was. In the webpage, they never said it's at so many degrees, longitude, latitude, whatever, in the sky, and this is where you would find it. It was always this mystery location. And, of course, that's not how you would present astronomical information. You would give its coordinates, you would give the magnitude, and anybody with telescopic equipment that could match that magnitude or see it would easily be able to see this object, but they never gave that. So that's what they were doing. So NASA is providing this crazy woman talks to aliens with photographs on a daily basis. And I caught him doing it, and I showed this. And I made it public that NASA is providing these photos. You know, this is the mystery telescope operator that's providing the crazy lady talks to aliens with photographs. And so I made it public, and of course I did not gain any popularity by doing that. But the whole thing from its very inception was a scam to bury the idea that there could be a Planet X out there. And of course, I think Harrington, back in the 1991, when he discovered the trajectory, the orbit of Planet X, and it was on a very near collision course with Earth at that time. Remember that the tail drag, once it became a comet, the tail drag slowed it down. Earth moved ahead in its orbit and missed us by 3 months. But at the time, it was on a direct collision course with Earth. And when I say direct collision course, I mean within a million miles. Very, very close. And so that would have been like four lunar distances. Extremely close. That would be close for an asteroid. But a planet? Something the size, four times the size of Earth with a companion swinging around it? Oh my goodness. And so that's why the CIA and the intelligence agencies were freaking out. Freaking out is mild term. And so anyway, that's why all of this calamity happened. That's why they went after Art Bell. That's why when I came along, they couldn't believe that I got in the middle of this. And so I was under constant attack, just absolute constant attack from web pages, etc. And I'll tell you a little story here. This is interesting as long as we're talking about this, because there are forces of good and evil working up in the very high levels of the military and in the government, etc., knowing that a lot is controlled by the bankers and the Federal Reserve, which is the arm of the European bankers in the United States that controls Congress and the presidency through the CIA, etc., etc., and the judicial system, etc. But anyway, I'm at the 2004 UFO Congress, and there was and I'm talking about the one that's Electric Highways to the Stars. I'm talking about the electromagnetic propulsion systems. There's a contingency of about 100 high-level scientists back in the back corner. And when I'm giving my talk, and this is with 1,200, 1,500 people in the audience. And so anyway, after the talk I give, there's a book signing. So I go out to the kind of the big, it's like an auditorium almost. They're side by side. The one has the seating for all the people for the talk and the big screen and everything like that. And that's, by the way, where you will see my picture. It's famous. You can see it on the internet. That's me giving a talk. And I'm pointing my finger up, and there's a big picture of the Wardenclyffe Tower on the back side of me. And that's at that 2004 UFO Congress talk that I gave. So afterwards is the book signing. So I'm doing a signing of the Atlantis to Tesla book. And I see this guy, he's standing back, you know, and all the people are crowded around the table, and these women are, oh, thank you, you know, and men, and, you know, they're talking to me, and big fans for a long time, and they, you know, I'm signing my book for them. Okay, so the book signing is getting down to the very last few people, and this guy is still standing there back. He's just very patient, standing there looking at me. And I kind of look at him, and it's like, okay, so the last person leaves the book signing, and it's late afternoon. I'm exhausted. And so this guy comes walking up to the table where I'm sitting, and I stand up, and I shake his hand, and he goes, first thing he does is hand me his business card. And he's a physicist on a submarine fleet with the U.S. Navy. And I had been talking about submarines and various propulsion systems, etc. And he said, don't talk about that anymore. That's classified information. And I'm like, oh. And then he starts talking to me. And he says, we follow your work. He says, we don't know how you figure all this stuff out. We have fleets of physicists working full-time with government support, and you're figuring out all this stuff that none of them have even a clue about. And he said, well, just keep doing what you're doing. We have you covered. And I've heard that from other people also, that there are people called watchmen. And I've had conversations with some of them, and that's the same thing they say. But I think there's something going on also in which possibly my biggest discoveries are yet to come. The ones I've already made, of which I'm listing many, many discoveries, are very good. Possibly my biggest discoveries are yet to come. and hopefully have a very long career in the future. And, you know, being in good health and good spirit and everything else is going good, and I'm maintaining myself. I maintain this radio show. I maintain my professional life. I have my water filter business. I have other things. To date, I've done other things completely unrelated to this, like finalist in an X Prize 2018. You'll see that on my records. And other discoveries that are, you know, totally unrelated to all of this other work, to which are very important discoveries also. Okay, so now something else I want to go into specifically here, and that is at the 2003 UFO Congress. I'm there, and across from me is David Icke. Just mentioning that this was the level of people there, Jim Mars. You know, I could go on for a long list of people who are prominent at this meeting. So this is very high-level people, all of them very accomplished, etc. And I'm one of the keynote speakers at this event in 2003. And by the way, Mark Hazelwood was there. And anyway, Mark and I were talking, and I think that was the first, well, I had met him at the Global Wings Conference the year before, and I think that's the first time I had met Mark personally at the Global Wings Conference at 2002. I remember him walking up to me, and I had to look up to him because he's a lot taller than I am. And Mark was a great guy, and of course, he grew up in Hollywood, and with all of the stars and all of the glamour, etc. And so anyway, at the 2003 UFO Congress, before it's just getting started, etc. And Mark and I are standing there talking at this big auditorium where all the tables were outside the entranceway, and Mark and I are standing there talking. And up comes this woman, and she's probably 30, 35 years old, and absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. And Mark looks at him, looks at her, and he looks at me, and he says, you know, I grew up in Hollywood, and this woman is better looking than Angelina Jolie and Catherine Zeta-Jones combined. And those were Mark's exact words. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is, you know. And so anyway, little did I know it, but that's the person that the CIA sent out to compromise me. And so anyway, I'm at my booth at the, you know, if you're not in the hall during the talks and things like that, typically you're out at your booth with your books and for people to buy the books and talk to people and things like that, contact the public. And like I say, David Icke is across from me. You know, Jim Mars is down the line, other people, I can't remember them all, but, you know, 100 people, and these are all people also giving a talk at the event. And so anyway, this woman comes strolling by my booth, and she stops and talks for a little bit. And so that night there was going to be a supper there, and I said, why don't we have supper tonight at the event, and we'll talk some more, because there were people around. And she goes, okay. And so I'll meet you at the supper tonight. Okay, so anyway, we go to the supper, and I'm sitting there, and I reserved an extra seat because these are all reserved tables. And the whole table that I'm at are women in their maybe 40s, 50s, something like that. But they're all sitting around, and they're all staring there looking at me. And so anyway, this woman comes in late. Of course, I'm not going to mention her name. She comes in late and dressed absolutely drop-dead gorgeous, sits down next to me, and we start to talk. And all the women at the table are just staring at us, and we're talking. Her, this woman, and I are talking, etc. And then the event ends, and she says, hey, there's some late-night meetings going on. Why don't you come with me? So I go to these meetings, and these are private meetings that are held at night in a hotel room, in somebody's hotel room. And they're talking about some of the most clandestine underworld activities going on in the U.S. government, including Area 51, what they call the hospital, which is a deep virus research laboratory down many floors deep in Area 51, where they have human live human patients and they're experimenting with viruses on people. And this is really, I mean, I'm kind of ill to my stomach listening to this, but this is what these people are talking about. Anyway, so this ends. We go out and we go in the elevator and we go up to my floor. And so she gets out with me and we're standing in like this little rotunda where the elevator is. And we're like talking and she's got her nose about 2 inches away from my nose and we're talking. And anyway, at the time I had contacts and very high level contacts. So I called them up and I said, what's going on here? This is before the supper. And they said, watch out, they've got a contact there. Somebody's trying to compromise you. And they gave me the person's handlers, the people that this person worked directly under through the CIA. And so anyway, like I say, we're talking, and her nose is about 2 inches from my nose. And I said, you know, you're really working for the wrong people. And she looks at me, and she goes, what do you mean? And I named off her handlers. And she looked at me, and her mouth dropped open, and she walked over to the wall, and she put her head on the wall like, oh my God, I've been discovered. And she said, how did you know? And so anyway, that was, I don't know what she was expecting, but clearly it was a setup for this woman to compromise me. Then we became much better friends. After that, I left. I went back to my room by myself. I'll be very clear about that. And she left. And then the next day, we started talking, and she became an ally of mine. In fact, she's the person that went into JPL and asked who there knew about me or my work, etc. And that's the person that got the reply, no comment. The same comment that Dan Golden, head of NASA, gave to Tony Scarpelli, and I've talked about that, when at this conference where Tony Scarpelli won Engineer of the Year Award, and Dan Golden was the main speaker. So anyway, this woman then became an ally of mine, and I won't say other places where this person worked or had influence, because it might key some people to understand who it is. I said, I don't mention names or anything about people who are still living. Very rarely will I mention a name of somebody that has passed on in this series of talks that I'm giving. But anyway, next week I'll continue with this series of talks on this time frame, which is just exploding in events, activity. And remember my webpage, this is brought to you commercial free. My water filters, you can get a 10% discount using the coupon code JMCC, the webpage jmccwaterfilters.com, or my other webpage jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.